Zakawani, the flying winger.
Oh, goodness me!
He doesn't need anybody, Steve Zakawani.
Steve Zakawani was never fun to go up against.
If it wasn't for Zakawani, none of this is possible.
It's Steve.
This is so weird.
Steve Zakawani!
Hey, what's going on, everyone? Steve Zakawani here. Welcome to Winging It with Zakawani. Another day, another time on the podcast for me to talk directly to you. And I think we're all in a good mood because not only the 3 points this past weekend, but it's how the team did it, especially in that first 45 minutes, was a fantastic way to follow up the positive result that took place in Kansas City. So we'll be talking about that today on the podcast. We'll be previewing a massive game against LAFC in their home opener this weekend. And I will have Taylor Graham joining me on the podcast to talk all things Sounders, past, present, and on the pitch, and also in the front office side, the business side of things. And as always, we'll get to a lot of your questions. But I want to begin with 4 points in the last two games. It's funny how much a difference a week can make. 10 days ago, it was panic. It was blow this thing up. It was we're going to struggle. It was we suck. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but you get the point. And then a decent result in Kansas that really should have been 3 points when I think back to it. But taking a point from them at that time with the injuries and suspension and the lineup that was out there actually was a good point on the road to Kansas. And then following that up with a game that really was a must win, or as must win as you can get at this stage of the season, against a Minnesota United team that doesn't travel very well, leaks a lot of goals. And the Sounders did what they're supposed to do. They took full advantage. And that first half, I thought, was especially impressive. That first half. Defensively, the team was very strong. It took Minnesota's forwards about 30 minutes to even have a touch or anything meaningful in and around the Sounders box. The team dominated the ball, and it was done with mostly possession in the attacking half, which you always want to see. It was purposeful. There was a plan. There were tactics, and there were some big decisions that Brian Schmetzer made, and we'll get to those a little bit later. But I did say all along, you can't judge this team until everybody's back. And there's a reason why I said that. There was a time when there was no Clint Dempsey. There was no Nico Lodero. No Victor Rodriguez. No Roman Torres. No Osvaldo Alonso. And the team was losing games. It's much different losing games with those guys than without those guys. And Osvaldo Alonso showed us a little bit in a cameo against Kansas City, but he put out the full show in his time on the pitch this past weekend. Gustav Svensson's goal should win goal of the week, most likely. It was a tremendous team goal. We're talking, I think, 22 passes. 22. By my count, Osvaldo Alonso was responsible for 8 or 9 of those passes. Your defending mid was orchestrating things, pulling things, a puppet master. He was your defensive mid who you rely on to shut down the other team's number 10, to be your defensive wall, was playmaking all throughout that goal. There was a switch pass to Nico Lodero. There was the ball in behind to Nuhu. There was the initial pass into Christian Roldan that eventually set up the goal. This was your defensive midfielder orchestrating things in the attacking half. One of his most underrated skills is his passing. He's a tremendous, tremendous passer, Osvaldo Alonso. And he comes up above 90% or so every season, sometimes reaches 95%. But he doesn't just play safe passes. He dictates the tempo of the game. And him being in there frees everybody up. It makes Christian Roldan better. It makes Nico Lodero better. It makes Will Bruin better. Because Osvaldo Alonso takes so much pressure off the team defensively, but then he adds just as much, if not more, these days, offensively. It was a masterclass. Tremendous goal. Tremendous goal. Absolutely. But Osvaldo Alonso being back on the pitch, I think, was a timely reminder that I've been right all along. I've been right. Wait till everybody's back, then judge the team. If Clint Dempsey, Osvaldo Alonso, Nico Rodero, Roman Torres, everybody's playing, Kelvin Leerdam, and the team loses the first three games, doesn't score a goal, I'd be the first one panicking. That's not what happened. And now we're seeing glimpses of what this team can do and can be. The talent's still there. Sure, we'd like to add one or two more players. Every team, really given the chance to sign quality players, will take it. But let's not forget what we have, and we saw that in Alonso. Brian Schmetz is now getting performances from players that we maybe didn't expect it. I didn't think Alex Roldan would come in these last two games and play how he's played. I definitely didn't expect that. And some people might even argue that he's ahead of where Christian was in his rookie year, which is something, because Christian's obviously been fantastic for this club. But he's starting to get performances from places we never expected it. You couple that with him getting performances from the places you do expect it, and that's how you build a team. That's how you get a successful season. And for me, a successful season still is a very strong regular season where the Sounders position themselves that if and when they get to MLS Cup, they would host. That still has to be the goal. But let's slow down a bit, because this upcoming stretch of games is going to be very challenging. Starting with LAFC, they are scary. I believe they have 12 points and everything has been away from home. They've scored so many goals. They give up a few, which gives me hope, but they score a ton. Rossi, Latif Blessing, Benny Feilhaber, one of my favorite players. Not very loved in this part of the country, but we respect his talent. And of course, Carlos Vela, who may, if he continues going this way, really push himself into that David Villa, Giovinco conversation. It is tremendous. And home openers are scary. We did it here against New York in 2009. How could anyone forget? Now they're opening this multi-million dollar stadium. They've got a great fan base behind them. They've already beat the Sounders once this year. They've done so well on the road away from home. They're going to want to put on a show. It's going to be a tough game. After that, the team plays Columbus. And then it's on the road to Toronto, who by then would have wrapped up the Champions League and would stop playing their C team and actually start playing their players. And that would be a home game for them. Then it's Portland. So the schedule coming up coincides with the players coming back from suspension and injuries. But it's going to be a challenge. And how the Sounders emerge from this next stretch is, in my mind, going to dictate how this season is going to go. Couple of questions. There were so many. We'll do what we can. Here's a question. Wolf Ikram was on the bench again and Alex Roldan started. Is this now purely tactics? Is Wolf not quite fit? And there were several of you who asked questions along those lines. And the answer is, I don't know. But what I will say is, Alex Roldan at this time deserves to start with what Brian Schmetzer has, and I can see why he's starting now. Does that mean as the season goes on and all things being equal that Wolf Ikram, or whether it's going to be Victor Rodriguez, maybe Andualo Bonner, doesn't reclaim that spot? But as of now, what Alex Roldan is giving them, which isn't necessarily a guy who's going to beat guys and get crosses in, they're not going for that right now. They're going for a guy you know is going to give you 90 minutes of honest work. He's going to keep it simple. He's going to connect passes. And that then creates spaces for other players to play in. So right now, he's winning that battle. But as the season goes on, hopefully we get a response from the other guys who want that position. That's how you build healthy competition. That's how your squad gets strong. Another question here. Christian Roldan, as a 10, is he more impactful in the attacking role that we should play him there, or is the pairing with Osvaldo Alonso too strong to break up? That's a tough one. I like Christian Roldan as a 10. I like him as a 6. I like him as an 8. I just like him. So it's a game-by-game basis at this point. I've been a big advocate of we've got to find the right position for him, but I'm not so sure right now, because against a team like Minnesota, who's not that strong defensively, you're at home. He does well in that number 10 role where he can run off the ball and pick and choose his moments to support the attack. And you don't need him as much defensively. because they're not giving you that much going forward, Minnesota. So it's going to be a case-by-case basis. As of now, for me, your two best holding mids is Christian Rodon and Osvaldo Alonso. If you're playing Toronto FC or Atlanta or whoever, NYCFC and MLS Cup final tomorrow, you start Christian and Ozzy as your holding mids. You play your best players in their best positions. But there are some games where I definitely see him as a number 10. Much more to come. And when we return, I will be joined by Taylor Graham, who was with the Sounders in the USL days, the MLS days, and is still with the club in a much different capacity. We'll get into that. And now it's also time for a special moment here on the podcast, because we get to announce the second winner of the Rivalry Road Trip Grand Prize. And that winner is Aaron Barton. Congratulations. He wins two tickets to see the Sounders take on the Timbers in Portland next month. The grand prize also includes a chartered bus to and from Portland, a commemorative scarf, food and beverages throughout the trip, and two tickets to the match against Portland here in Seattle on June 30th. Good news for the rest of you. We have 8 more spots for you to win, and you can just enter at soundersfc.com/rivalryroadtrip. We'll be right back after this short break with Taylor Graham.
Arnold to Gutierrez. Can they sting Columbus here? They get it over back post. Chance here. They tie it up. They tie it up. Taylor Graham.
Look at the only time Gutierrez has gotten forward the entire game. He delivers this picture-perfect cross. Good, strong near post runs, taking defenders away. And a smashing header.
And welcome back to Winging It with Zakawani. I'm so happy to be joined by the one, the only, Taylor Graham, one of all of our favorite former teammates, just a guy that was always such a great help to all of us, especially me as a young player. I got some stories for you that will come up in this interview for sure, but happy to be joined by Taylor, who had a long professional career and now has been in the front office for the Sounders for a while. We'll talk about that too, but Taylor, welcome.
It's great to be here. Was I helpful or was I a nuisance in your first couple of years in Seattle? I think it was probably a little bit of both.
Both, and I'm going to mention both.
Okay.
But I do want to start on the soccer side of it. Your thoughts on the team's start to the season overall, obviously coming off a very good win at the week and a much-needed win. What's kind of been your thoughts of the team's start to the season?
Look, the Sounders have started slow in previous years. Yeah. This year was built around launching Champions League. You know, everything was built around success in Champions League. There was a bye early in the season to prepare for Champions League. There was another bye in April to try to set the team up for success, looking towards that semifinal. And, you know, you don't get through. There's a couple injuries. You know, it's unfortunate that the team wasn't able to put everything that they had behind Champions League, because I would have loved to have seen them at full capacity compete in this tournament. So that, you know, that was, from a fan's perspective, that was tough. You know, we qualified for this tournament in 2016. You want to be able to put your best foot forward for various reasons that, you know, that wasn't able to take place. And, you know, you've talked about this in the past with previous guests. You know, situationally, you know, the Sounders were in a tough spot with three red cards in three games. I think it's tough to compete against anybody, let alone when you have injuries, when you're playing down a man. And so this is a really good team with a ton of talent coming back, and it's a long season. Mm-hmm. I was looking back and was surprised to think it was 10 points out of 11 games or 11 points out of 10 games at the start of 2017.
Yeah.
Wins cure all. It's great to see some goals, some great goals. Yeah. What a bomb from Gustav. And slow, this team's going to find the rhythm. They're going to find the momentum, especially with a consistency of games on the weekends. I hope they can continue that from Minnesota on to LAFC this weekend.
So I spend a lot of time on Twitter, maybe too much time. And when I'm on there, I can kind of gauge the pulse of how the fans are feeling and stuff. And I've been on record to say that I can kind of understand the fans' panic early on, but I did think that this team or franchise deserved the benefit of the doubt.
Right.
When you've been to, it's tough to get to an MLS Cup final. I never went to one and we had really good teams. So to get to back-to-back finals, I get it was a slow start. I felt there were such strong reasons why. You had Roman suffering with injuries, Ozzy, Nico, Clint didn't play much. These are key players.
Right.
So from your perspective, you kind of understand the fans' panic, or did you take the approach of, we'll be okay once everyone's healthy?
Yeah, I'm somewhere in between, right? Sports is emotional, right? The reason why we do what we do is because it elicits such an emotional response. And so I think everyone has the right to say what they think. Personally, if you're asking me, nothing is broken. There's a ton of talent on this team. There's been some really unfortunate circumstances. But Ozzie's back. And Ozzie looks like the Ozzie of 2009 when we were in preseason. And we said, this is a guy who can be a game changer in this league. You've got Victor that dressed for the first time. You've got guys that are stepping up. You've got young guys that have been given opportunity in Alex. And now they've proven that they belong. And so the pieces are coming together. And actually, it's going to get harder for Brian and company to decide, which 11 am I going to put out on a weekly basis? And again, as you look towards May and into June with the World Cup coming, we're going to need the depth and the versatility of these players to be able to, when you have players on your team that are going to go and play in Russia, that's a benefit, but it's also tough sometimes when you lose some of those key difference makers. And so nothing's broken in my opinion. I think that it's a long grind. I want to see the Sounders put their best foot forward in the season, and they're getting close to being able to do that.
This Sunday, the Sounders go to LAFC to help them open up their stadium. Now, when I think of LAFC, I think of Atlanta. It reminds me a lot of the Sounders. These are franchises that did it the right way. They launched correctly, successfully launched. To be a professional athlete, to get to the level you got to, that I got to, you got to have some amount of pride, ego, and be competitive. From the front office side, when you guys see Atlanta, you see LAFC, I know it's a good thing for the league, but is there an element of challenge and competitiveness of, we want to prove we're still number one as a franchise?
Yeah, absolutely. And separated from this conversation was, I think it was ESPN put out their ambitious rankings this week. And so those are things that we're all reading and seeing. Where are other people saying that we stack up against the competition? You know, I do think it's important to compare yourself to others, but I think I'm singularly focused, and a lot of people in the front office are thinking about, we have to get to the point where we're giving our best as our own group, not looking around, not looking at attendance measures from Atlanta. But if we take care of the stuff that we can, we know that we're going to have a really good product and our fans are going to be happy. And so the first priority is to spend time taking care of the things that we can control. And then depending on what happens in the league, you know, we'll adjust accordingly, but we want to keep pushing. And as other teams push us, we have to continue to evolve. I think that's just part of sports. Sports is really different than it was 9-10 years ago when we came into the league.
Yeah.
It's always evolving. And the only thing that's consistent is change. And unless you're continuing to push a little bit, you're going to get past.
Going back to 2009, and I've thought of this so often over the years, the answer to this question, why did the Sounders launch so successfully? And I think there's so many reasons. You can go from, you know, obviously on the pitch, the team was successful right off the bat. A lot of credit goes to the players, the coaching staff, the front office for putting a product together, drafting correctly, signing correctly. That's great. But I think everything from like the jersey colors to keeping the Sounders name to maybe the marching band. I don't know what it was, the march to the match. What do you think is the reason or the reasons why it was so successful?
Well, there's no recipe for success, because if there was, then we would be standing in someplace else and we might be doing something different. But, you know, Seattle was a unique circumstance, and there was a bunch of different factors. You know, the team's success on the field, winning those first couple games, again, established credibility. Partnering with the Seahawks and having that NFL mentality from the beginning about how to run a business, that was instrumental about setting a really, really high bar. You've got a void in the sports community with the Sonics having left. You've got something new and different, which is the Sounders and Major League Soccer, which is consistent with, I think, the personality of Seattle as a city. You had data that showed that when international soccer games came to Seattle, there was a huge appetite for teams to want to see a high-level, consistent soccer product. And then you have the nostalgia from teams that dated back, you know, from 1974 and the Sounders lived on. So there was a myriad of factors that led to success. It's fun to be a part of it. I've always told people that I've been chasing the game of soccer for my entire life. For the first 31 years of my life, it was on the playing side. It was to be a good professional and to be fit and to, you know, to work on my trade. And now once I left the team side and joined the business side, it's almost like the next evolution of my love for the game, because I'm dealing with stuff and I'm focused on things that have nothing to do with what we spent so much of our lives talking about. And I genuinely believe that sports has a really special place in people's hearts, especially in this city. I believe in what the Sounders can do for this community. I believe in where this sport is going and the trajectory of this league. And it's just fun to be along for the ride. It's fun to see what's happened because it's constantly changing.
When people think back to 2009, 2010, those first couple of years, those early years, I know the fans have great memories, but I think on the inside, we were having just as much fun. And I think for me, it's like, I came from Ohio from college and I landed here, and you couldn't be drafted anywhere. To be drafted to Seattle, I think we had such a good team spirit. It just was so many great guys in the locker room. I don't know how we found that blend, how it was successful. What are your memories from kind of that team, those early teams, the playing side, and characters from like Lundberg and Casey Keller, who are complete opposites, but were the two pillars of the team. Then you had like Freddie and Ozzy and that group, and John Kennedy. It just was such a unique group. And what's kind of some of your memories from those days?
We never lacked banter. The locker room, that's what I remember more than the wins and losses. Believe me, I remember the wins and the losses just like you do. I can remember specific plays from a high school soccer game, but it's the relationships and it's the stories. In a marketing meeting this morning, one of the icebreaker questions was, what's your favorite Halloween costume that you've ever had? And it brought me back to Freddie Ljungberg hosted a Halloween party, and he jumped out of the bushes dressed as Fat Bastard. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on this podcast, but he was Fat Bastard to a T, and then you had Casey Keller who was carrying a chainsaw around scaring all the young guys. I was Cookie Monster and Roger was a cookie. I mean, it was a time to have fun when we were so lucky to be in Seattle doing what we're doing. And again, for me, you came from Ohio. I started in Kansas City and then I went to the New York Red Bulls. And so I had played in huge NFL stadiums where there wasn't a ton of fans and it felt a little cavernous. And so to actually be at the place where you were filling an NFL stadium, you were in an NFL stadium, but it was filled and it was just overflowing with passion. It was almost this, it was kind of the perfect end to a fun time chasing the game on the soccer side.
Yeah, we had fun, but also I tell people all the time that, you know, being drafted for me, the number one pick, all of that, I spent a couple of days living on cloud nine and being high, and then I came to reality quick when I came to Seattle.
Right.
And I learned to be a pro from you, Zach Scott, Roger Levesque, Casey Keller. I'll give you examples. My first training at VMAC in the cold, I think I dribbled by someone and I scored in a 5-on-5, and I took a moment just to enjoy the play, and then I came back to reality and Casey Keller is going off on me to get back on defense. Next play, I had the ball. I'm dribbling. I didn't lose it, and I passed it to you, and you went off. You said it has to be quicker. It's got to be quicker. And in my head, I'm like, I haven't lost the ball, but it was that expectation of you're now a pro. Here's how you play, and watching how you guys trained. You know, sometimes I remember in 2012, I was coming back from an injury, and Roger Levesque hadn't been playing much at the time, but he was training so hard.
Yeah,
and he probably wasn't going to be in the 18 at the end of the game, and I watched that. And it just reminded me the level to be a pro. And of course, Zach Scott, you played through broken foot, probably had a broken back at one point, would be tackling people. And Zach wouldn't always play either. So that is a question for that. How important is it for a team to have that, those kinds of figures? And do you see that in the current team? That's the question.
You know, it's funny that you remember that. I felt one of my roles I was 29. It was a guy I was fighting to get on the field for as many minutes as I possibly could. I felt like one of my roles was to try to connect the dots and to push the buttons for some of the young players and keep them hungry and to keep them motivated. But while at the same time, I mean, we're all competitive. We all want to be on the field. You know, having played in the USL and been a part of that transition, you had the perspective of the Rodgers and the Zachs was always to appreciate everything, right? Because there wasn't the shiny, fancy stuff in the USL. It was just a really professional environment where guys train hard all day, every day, because that's why we did it. There was no other reason to do it other than the love of the game. Once the league starts to push off, I hope that we never lose. I hope the players never lose that perspective about how fortunate we are as Sounders and as soccer players to be able to do that. As teams, our rosters are putting together, it's a lot harder to allocate your your 16th through 22nd roster spot for a 29-year-old center back. It's hard. I understand the challenges. You want to give those opportunities to Sam Rogers. You want to give those opportunities to 18 to 22-year-olds who can be that next generation. And so as the evolution of the roster composition has changed and gotten younger for those more reserve-type players, it allows the future to be bright, but it also comes at the sacrifice sometimes of the Open Cups, right? Because instead of being able to put a second 11 on the team who has four to 8 years of MLS experience, you're putting a younger team out there that are going to learn from every single experience. Yeah. And so I think that there's always people who will push those younger players, and sometimes that comes more at the responsibility of some of the assistant coaches than it would have maybe at our time when you had the Pat Noonans and the Tyson Walls and the Brads and the Rogers and the Zachs. And again, we had a really competitive group that demanded a high level, but that was also set at the top from Brian and Ziggy.
There were so many people. You just mentioned Tyson Wall, who I thought, does this person not like me? And it was weird. But then you realize within a week or two that they actually do like you a lot, and that's why they're pushing you. They see so much in you. One of those people was Brian Schmetzer. I spent my whole rookie year thinking Schmetz did not like me.
Right.
And then I stopped being a rookie and became in my second year, and he did almost a 180. And then we spoke after, and he goes, it was all part of a plan. It's all deliberate. It's all intentional. Yep. I asked him recently if he struggled making the... Because he's such a great guy, and he cares about people. But as a head coach, you almost got to be a bit more distant and not the good cop as much, and that if he struggled with that being a head coach, you know him better than most people. Do you think that could be a challenge for him? Because Schmetzer, for example, I'll give you an example, the Nuhu and Waylon Francis battle, for example. Schmetzer loves Nuhu as a person. But at times, as a head coach, you have to be cutthroat and cut the player and maybe not have to always explain yourself, whereas Schmetzer is the kind of guy who might want to take the guy to coffee and speak for an hour and tell him where he's gone wrong. So do you think that could be a challenge for him just because of the kind of person he is?
Brian's smart. He's very intentional with his decisions, and he knows the right way to... he's always motivating players for what he thinks to be the right reasons. And again, for you as a young player, that was to be hard on you.
Yeah.
And for other players, it's to put their arm around you and to motivate them and to say, today wasn't your day, but tomorrow will be. And so everyone reacts or is motivated in different ways. I saw it through the USL days. I was one of the more veteran guys, so Brian would easier on me, or he would lean on me probably to set some of the tone, especially with some of those veteran guys. Brian will be just fine with this. Brian will be just fine. I think as the stakes get higher, I mean, the pressure associated with being a head coach has changed so much from the USL to the MLS days, and he set a pretty high bar, having been in two MLS Cups in a year and a half, essentially, is what he is. And so Brian will be just fine, but he will always try to motivate players in the right ways.
Last but not least, and this could be, I think, if we really went into it, just the answer to this question, a whole podcast in itself, but as concise or as easy as you can make people like me to understand, what is your day-to-day look like now? Like, what are your actual responsibilities? What do you do?
What do I do? You know, I do a lot. Yeah. So I'm on the business operations team. I've been on the business operations team since I retired at the end of the 2011 season. You fans might see me walking around on match day. I actually, the most common thing that people say to me is they're like, hey, Tyson Wall, good to see you, Tyson. And I think, yeah, man, if I could hit a free kick like he did in the upper corner against New England with my left foot, then maybe my career would have been longer. Actually, a fan said, hey, Grant Wall, to me the other day, which I thought was the most entertaining. So I work with the stadium a lot on our relationship from an operations perspective. That's one of the things I spend a lot of my time doing. I'm constantly dialoguing with our Alliance Council and Democracy in Sports and supporter groups to make sure that they have the information to continue to do what they do, because they're a big part of our club and our club culture. I'm getting involved with some of the marketing stuff. Again, my job is to try to set our group up for success. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that comes through through prioritizing and picking and choosing what's coming from the league and what the league is telling us about research and trends about where we should be spending our time. Every single person in this office could be spending their time doing something different. But if you're not all pushing for the same goals, I think we're going to struggle. And so some of it's just kind of being ever present in the office and talking to some different departments. But then again, my day to day, I spend a lot of time working on the operations with the stadium, with our community outreach and overseeing all of our philanthropy efforts, working with our group that oversees our youth business and some of the youth camps. And so Again, I'm trying to be a Jack. I know enough about the organization to be dangerous, but not enough about the tactics to really talk specifically about the skill sets that each one of our groups is doing. We have really, really talented staff that are doing very good work and intentional in their specific fields. And sometimes you try to get the right people on the field and you let them just work. Mm-hmm. And that's what I essentially think my role is, to put people in roles to be successful and then to sit back and then watch the success happen.
Always a pleasure. Ladies and gentlemen, that's Taylor Graham, the one, the only. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, bud. Sorry for yelling at you.
All is forgiven. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with a lot more on Winging It with Zach Wally.
Svensson, 28 yards out. Oh, Gustav Svensson! Upper corner, Svensson nails it. There's the first goal at home. 1-0 in the 23rd.
Welcome back. Right here on Winging It with Zach Wani. Thanks again to Taylor Graham for joining me. Always a great time talking to Taylor, one of my favorite people in this organization since I arrived in Seattle back in 2009. A couple more questions from you. And as I said, there were so many, so I do try to get to them. Always send them. I like reading them anyway, thinking about them, and we do try to answer as many as we can. Here's a question that came in. Do we have an ideal starting 11, or will we continue to see a mix-up, especially in the midfield? In the first podcast episode, General Manager Garth Lagerwey said he doesn't know that we have an 11 and if we even need one. We have 14, 15, 16 deep, and I agree with him. I don't know that you have... this is my 11, and that's who I'm playing regardless. I think, you know, in a one-off game, a final, I probably have a good idea of who Brian Schmetzer goes with if the whole team's fit. But game to game, there is flexibility here. It depends what you want. If you want width and you want to try and attack from the wide areas, okay, in that situation, you probably can even play Clint Dempsey up top, Nico Lodero underneath him, and then you put two wingers on the outside. So, Handuaro Buono on one side. What about Henry Wingo? So, he has those kind of options there. He has the Nico on the right option with Clint underneath in the middle, and then on the left, once Victor Rodriguez comes back, and then Will Bruin up top. That will probably be the strongest group right now on paper. But then you have Osvaldo Alonso, who can play alongside Gustav Svensson, Christian Roldan. It varies. At left back, that's still a battle. We're going to see who wins between Francis and Nuhu. So I don't think there is an 11 we can put down. Like in my years playing, especially 2009 and a lot of 2010, I could tell you 4 weeks out who was going to be playing. That's the way the league was. That's the way our team was. And we just knew. And it was fine. And I think this way is also fine, not knowing. But there is definitely 13 to 14 deep. Here's a fun question. If the Sounders had to play a game of pickup basketball, which five guys am I putting out there? I think we did this before. We were on a road trip in D.C., I want to say. Maybe it was Chicago. And we found a YMCA gym and we played. I think Casey Keller dunked. James Riley was decent. Roger Levesque could play. So those guys were there. Terry Boss, former goalkeeper here, he was there too. I watched... You know, I'm a big NBA fan, but I don't play. Now, looking at the team, I mean, Chad Marshall, Roman Torres at center. Point guard, Nico, with that vision. Shooting guard, Clint. At three, see, it gets tough. It gets tough. You got to tell me. You got to tweet me and tell me who's the starting five. And I'm going basically correlating their soccer skills to the basketball court. I don't know if these guys can actually play basketball or not. I'd assume some of them can. Nico can't. Roman can't. I know that for a fact because they're from parts of the world like me where we don't really play. But that's a pretty good question. As always, send your questions in. Hashtag Ask Zach. I will do my best to answer what I can. There are a lot that we do get, but always really appreciate the interaction and being able to read your questions. Big three things. Number one, I often get this question. What is the difference between the young players that make it and those who don't? And that's a great question. I'm saying this with Alex Roldan in mind and also his brother a little bit because I think Christian's made it. And I think Alex will be okay. He's going to make it. Whether that's in Seattle or elsewhere, he'll make it. Because I look at them and I can see right away. And we've had so many players come to the Sounders over the years. So many trialists and guys who spent a week or a month, or guys who came in training camp. And I got very good at knowing within a couple of days if that person would make it or not. And it wasn't talent. Talent's one thing. It was something intangible. I just watched the way they approach the game. And your approach to the game varies. Some people watch a lot of film. They study the game. Some people, I mean, they treat every training session like it's the World Cup final. They get after it. Some people sit by the vets and ask a lot of questions. And those are the kinds of things I see and I say, this guy's going to make it. And I saw that in Christian. People that I spoke with about Christian on the coaching staff, he said he loves this game. He watches football. He goes home and studies it. And he's always asking questions. He learned from Gonzo Pineda. He's learning from Osvaldo Alonso. He soaks things up. He asks questions to Nico Lodero. And he's very, very teachable from the coaching staff perspective. And then he has the talent to go with it. So, of course, you need talent, but it's so much more. And I see that in Alex Rodon. And with him, he plays every game like it's his last game. He runs and he works and he battles and he fights. And he has talent to go with it. I remember watching his debut against Dallas, I believe. And he came on and he tried to shoot from 50 yards. A rookie. Picked the ball up, looked up, keep off his line, I'm going to shoot. That's confidence. That's bravery. That's amazing. And I love seeing that. And I knew then that, okay, he believes in himself. He's got the confidence and he's got the work ethic. He's going to be okay. So that's what I would say is the difference between those that make it and those that don't. There's been so many talented players, not just here in Seattle, but all over the world, every sport, who don't make it. And you wonder why. And I think it's once you have the talent, that's one thing, but you've got to have intangibles. And that's your approach to the game. And that's the young players that make it. Number two, big coaches make big decisions. The master at this was Sir Alex Ferguson. There was a defender called Jaap Stam, who was from the Netherlands and played for Man U. And I mean, this guy was a beast. Jaap Stam, oh my God, I would have hated to play against him. I mean, he was so physically imposing. He used to lock down the Manchester United backline. This is when I was an Arsenal fan. Oh, I didn't like this guy. He stepped out of line one time. He wrote a book, I believe, and he criticized Sir Alex Ferguson. The next week, he was sold to Lazio in Serie A. David Beckham, one of the most loved players in England of all time, free kick master, set piece master. He's crossing. I've never seen anybody with the ability to pass and cross like he has ever in the history of the game. Biggest celebrity on the planet at one point, and Alex Ferguson felt it was time to move on, and he sold him to Real Madrid. Roy Keane, the coach on the pitch, the guy who would win the game in the tunnel before the game because he would get into your mind. He would make the big tackle and drive his team forward, and everything he'd lacked in actual football talent, he made up for in his bravado. Wasn't the biggest, but he played like it. He went on Man United TV, the team's channel, the club's TV station in England, and he criticized the young players. A month later, he was sent to Celtic in the Scottish Premier League. No one was bigger than Alex Ferguson. And no one was bigger than the club. Big coaches make big decisions. This weekend, Clint Dempsey was on the bench for the Sounders. Now, that's a big deal. Why? One, Clint was fit. There's no injury that I know of. But Brian Schmetzer saw that for this game, based on the time Clint's had off, and for what I need, I can bring Clint in off the bench. And credit to Brian Schmetzer for taking such a decision. And credit to Clint Dempsey for buying in. And any coach, you can get Clint Dempsey, a player of that caliber. A player who's achieved so much. He can make his case for being the best US player of all time. That's a big thing. He can make his case for being the best US player to play overseas. He can make his case for being Fulham's best player of all time. And Brian Schmetzer said, no, this is the team we're going with. That's a big decision. Credit to both of them on that. I will say, though, if you're playing in Atlanta a New York City FC, even an LAFC away, a bigger game, maybe a slightly better team, you start Clint Dempsey. You still do. He's not an old super sub. This is still a guy who possesses qualities that very few players possess. But big coaches take big decisions, and Brian Schmetzer did that. Last question, and this is a tough one, but I finally have my answer. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and the question is, should we as MLS fans of other clubs cheer for Toronto FC in the Champions League final? In 1999, I was leaving a training session for Arsenal as a kid walking in London, and I was depressed because after training, we went into a meeting room and we watched the Champions League final. It was Bayern Munich against Manchester United, and Bayern was winning 1-0. And then Teddy Sheringham and then Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, remember him, scored 2 goals in the last 2 minutes. And Man U won the Champions League and they won the treble. And I was so upset. I was an Arsenal fan. It wasn't a win for the Premier League against the Bundesliga. No, that was for Man U. So my opinion, I don't think I'm going to be cheering for TFC. I want them to win if it makes, you know, our league look better. But actively cheering, why? You cheer for the team you're a fan of. And I completely understand the argument of this is a Liga MX versus MLS thing. I get that. But at the core, the people in this part of the country, you're not TFC fans. You want the Sounders to be the first team to win the Champions League. We're a little bit selfish like that. We're greedy. We want the trophies here. We don't want to see Toronto lifting up that cup. That's not a win for the Sounders. That's a win for Toronto. So as an Arsenal fan, I've never cheered for Man U in the Champions League. I've never cheered for Liverpool. Liverpool's playing in, they're playing right now against Roma. I'm not cheering for Liverpool. I'm indifferent. And I think that's my approach when I think of answering that question. Well, that's all we have time for this week. Remember, the Sounders on the road against LAFC. I'm looking forward to that one. Should be an attacking extravaganza. And there's a little bit of history already with LAFC coming here and beating the Sounders. So it'll be great to kind of go to their home pitch and spoil that party. This has been Winging It with Zakwani. I am Steve Zakwani. As always, thanks for tuning in. And we'll be back next week, hopefully recapping another 3 points for the Sounders.